What did it for Gareth Morgan and John McChrystal in the end was simply the weight of evidence. So many aspects of the planet changing, so many things going on, so many observations. And just the fact that the theory, radiative forcing, CO2, multi-atomic molecule, it's just so simple. Any argument by a skeptic to explain what's going on involves all sorts of remarkable things with cosmic rays and God knows what else. But just much more complicated. If you've got a simple theory or hypothesis that explains something, Occam's razor says, why the hell do you need to build on it? Why do you need to embellish it? Okay, I'd like to move on now and talk about just some thoughts and feelings I have about where we're headed. And if you look at modern society, what we have here today, essentially the whole of Western society is really based on carbon. And it's absolutely everywhere, everything that we're involved with. And you think about it, if you're taking iron ore or aluminium oxide, bauxite, you want to reduce that, what happens? You reduce it to iron and aluminium, you're releasing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. The same thing with cement production. Making concrete, you release CO2. So it's everything that we're doing, not only burning the fossil fuels, is releasing carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Now the thing is, this doesn't apply to New Zealand, but globally, most of the carbon dioxide emissions are actually coming from coal-fired power plants. And that's followed by changes in land use, for example, Brazil, the rainforests and so on. So there's a couple of things that you can think of straight away, and the obvious thing is you just simply do not build any more coal-fired power plants until we figure out how to capture the CO2. It's just as simple as that. Stop all land clearing and start reforesting. These are major things that can be done immediately. Now, if you've looked at the New Zealand news media, you'll have seen a lot of rhetoric going on about the ETS, the Emissions Trading Scheme. I'm going to stick my neck out here. I think it's just absolutely ridiculous to get involved with a complicated scheme like that. I think you just simply go in with a tax. If you're damaging the atmosphere, you pay for it. And the amount you pay represents the amount that it would cost to clean it up. That's what happens with water management, wastewater management. It should be the same thing with the atmosphere. I don't see how the ETS, especially in its watered-down form at the moment, is going to result in any reduction of carbon emissions. If you look at the infrastructure that we have, roads, motorways, freeways, buildings, all of those have lifetimes of decades. You're not simply going to roll those over immediately. The thing is that motor vehicles don't. So if you can actually run the existing electricity grids with non-CO2 producing energy, then in one stroke you've got a way of powering vehicles, and those, I'll talk about this later on, those vehicles that exist, and cutting down emissions at the same time. And there's huge potential to do this in New Zealand. You will have heard about electric vehicles. This is one by Mitsubishi. It was imported by Meridian earlier in the year. They're already being used overseas quite widely, and the other Japanese car manufacturers are starting to produce them. This particular one runs on lithium-ion batteries. It's been crash-tested, which is very important if you're going into production. The range is 160 kilometres, which is pretty ideal for commuting. The cost is very high. You're probably talking around $30,000 to $40,000 initially. But here's the thing. If you look at the components of a battery electric vehicle, just about nothing compared to a regular combustion engine, a diesel or petrol engine. seems to me it's very analogous to, you remember the old tape recorders, the VHS tape recorders, very complicated mechanical thing. When you compare that to a thing like a modern hard drive digital recorder, which has virtually zero components, it's very sophisticated electronically, and these things are, I mean, there's very smart electronics in there, but the point is that all of that stuff, mass-produced, is very, very cheap compared to all the bits and pieces and mechanical stuff that used to be in a VHS recorder, for example. So this, I see this as a real planet saver, electric cars, and particularly for this country. Now, you can do a very simple back-of-the-envelope calculation, and I won't go into that, but you could have 2 million of these things, and the astonishing thing is, a conservative calculation shows that it would use less than 5% of the energy that we currently generate. So the current grid wouldn't even be stretched to charge all of these vehicles. The other thing about it, once you have those vehicles and once you get into smart metering and electronics, you can really start to use the potential of those vehicles to cut down on the need for extra power stations. Peak load power stations are what a lot of fuss is about at the moment in New Zealand. In the Rodney District, Contact, want to build a gas turbine plant. Huge ruckus about that. They say it's essential for peak load. You have this sort of thing, you don't need that extra power station. We already generate all of the energy we need, it's just generated at the wrong times. So we're talking about a storage issue rather than needing new power stations. This sort of stuff is already happening in many European countries, especially Denmark and Norway, for example, and also in Israel. A lot of this stuff is going on in California. It's really exciting to be there. The innovation that you see there with companies building stuff based around renewable energy and power production, it's just incredible. It's really exciting. What's going on in New Zealand is we're stuck with the Max Bradford, hello, legacy. And I'm sorry about this, but that's a real bugger of a thing. Because what's happened is, has anyone here noticed their power prices going down because of competition between the energy companies? No. No. Good to hear. This is an absolute mess. We've got the most complicated electricity legislation anywhere in the world, and it absolutely needs to be changed. So, moving away from carbon. Here are the things that are already out there, and they're all doable. Energy efficiency, number one. Not only does it not cost money, it actually pays you back to become energy efficient. Electric cars, I've already talked about. We won't talk about all of these things. I'm going to talk a little bit about biofuels later on. Nuclear power. Now, a number of years ago, I was in a group which was called Scientists Against Nuclear Arms. And nuclear power, we didn't want a bar of it. And I still feel that way, but I can tell you that this problem that we're facing with carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is so serious that I would even think about nuclear power as at least a temporary solution to get us out of this mess. Concentrated solar thermal power is already happening in the deserts in California and Arizona. And it's a way of turning solar energy into stored energy, which can then be used as a kind of a base load power station. Pumped storage, should be a lot more of that done in New Zealand. There isn't, once again, because of the Max Bradford legacy. Very interesting to look at what other countries do in terms of electricity generation. Germany's got a huge investment in renewable energy production. And the success really has to do with this remarkable feed-in tariff system. And what that does is it essentially makes it competitive for householders to have different kinds of energy generation. And in terms of electricity, in Germany, that's bought back initially at a very high rate with separate metering, and then it decreases as you pay off your investment. It's a very smart idea, and solar electricity or photovoltaics in Germany are not very, very good compared to a place like New Zealand. We're closer to the equator, and we have much less, much more sunlight here. The other important thing about this politically is that those costs are actually borne by the industry itself. It's not a subsidy, and so it's ultimately the consumer that's paying for it. So if you get a change in government, you don't suddenly get a subsidy flipped out. And that happens in New Zealand all the time. You'll have subsidies for insulation will go in, a whole lot of companies will get going, putting in insulation in New Zealand, change of government, oh no, we're not having that subsidy, gets pulled out. The other thing is that this is a remarkable employer. 250,000 people are employed in the RE industry in Germany. So really forward thinking, and that's what we should be doing here in this country. This is a factory in Heidelberg that happens to make rubber mattresses, but that's by the way. I talked to the owner of the factory. This is a 100 kilowatt array. He said for him it was an absolute no-brainer to have this installed financially, and as well as that, there's a great big meter, great big digital readout in the foyer of this company that shows number of tons of CO2 that are saved going to the atmosphere because of this array. What about electricity production, small-scale electricity production in New Zealand? It's limited almost entirely to off-grid applications because there are not the incentives for the ordinary person to become grid-connected. It is too complicated. I have tried, and you're up against bureaucracy you wouldn't believe. Just looking at a couple of the projects that I've been involved with, and you might ask, well, hell, Dave, you work for the IPCC, what the hell are you doing with this stuff? The thing is, for me, I thought it was very important to really understand the nuts and bolts of renewable energy. And it really has paid off, because a lot of the stuff you see written about renewable energy is written by academics. It's quite theoretical. For example, showing that in the UK, it would be impossible to run the UK on renewable energy. Now, I know from my own experience, if you, as a homeowner, a client, go in and put in a renewable energy system, the first thing you do is change your whole pattern of energy use. So you reduce the amount of energy you use. And that wasn't taken into account in the UK study, for example. This is a small micro-hydro system. For a job that I did out in the Wairarapa. Small photovoltaic systems, this one here runs the Low NZ offices. Most importantly, it runs the beer fridge downstairs. If we get a little bit short of energy, then the office has to shut down because we have to keep the beer fridge going, obviously. Just going on, some impressions I have about people power. If you look at the current society that we have here in New Zealand, there's an enormous amount of power exerted by the outfits that are selling you food and electricity and so on and so forth. You really got to think in terms, I think, of where does the food come from, the farmers' markets. And I think that really everyone should be involved in supporting some sort of local farmers' market, rather than the big supermarkets. Stuff here, generally wealthy people, the more money you have, you kind of get locked into this frenzy of buying stuff. There's a huge wastage in current society. So I think I've already shown you some of the technology and stuff that's out there to prevent or reduce carbon emissions. Another thing, I've put this up here, and actually Peter France from NIWA alerted me to this one. Greenwashing. This is actually an advertisement that you find on the web, it's a website, for a German company, and what they're advertising is renewable energy, a home heating furnace. And what they're pointing out here, if you can read the German, is that this big bucket of wheat, which has the same energy as these wood pellets and that heating oil, costs €1.50. The heating oil costs €2.80, and the wood pellets cost €2. And what they're saying is, look, renewable wheat, and they've developed a heating plant that burns wheat to heat the home. Now, yes, it is renewable, and yes, you do pull CO2 out of the atmosphere, but look at all the subsidies that have gone into that, the first thing. And the other thing, for heaven's sake, this is food. So this is a very, very dubious planet saver. And I'm afraid to say there's a lot of this kind of stuff going on at the moment. Biofuels in general have got a pretty bad name. So to me, it really is about public involvement, giving people the choice to generate and use their electricity wisely, and I don't see why we can't do that in this country, of all countries. The other point is that all of us are the real force in New Zealand. It's not the government, and it's not these big companies. And I think we've got to have a massive public buy-in and involvement in just changing the way we live. Just some other thoughts. Meat. Now, meat in New Zealand is a little different from most other Western countries in that most of it's range-fed. If you see what goes on in the US, it's pretty disgusting. Big feedlots, biotics used because the antibiotics, because the animals are so crowded together, they get sick. It's pretty bad. Another message I'd like to get across here is the whole thing about reducing, reusing, repairing and recycling. Let's have a look at this. This is a little example. My brother-in-law's got a batch up in Turangi, a standard electric water jug. And this is what my daughter did to it. She burned it so badly it went down to one of the live conductors. So deadly dangerous. Something had to be done. So I talked to my brother-in-law about it. He said, oh, don't worry about it, Dave. Just go down to the warehouse and buy a new one. Now, yeah. You figure out what you're doing when you do that. First of all, this thing goes into the landfill, and there's some fairly nasty metals in there. And the second, your demand in buying that new jug from the warehouse means that more resources have to be ripped out of what we all know as a finite planet. So the solution is just simply to repair it. Now, I actually went down to the local Bunnings to do this, and the guy there said, oh, you're not allowed to repair that. And that's how silly it is. That's how it's gotten, because of course you're allowed to repair it. Absolutely. Anyone who's got a bit of knowledge can repair stuff after the war. You can't do hard wiring on your house, but you can certainly do this. So the result, $3 and the jug's operational again. Now, our parents' generation, and even when I was younger, you used to repair things all the time, and we don't now. So this is a kind of an insidious thing, and it almost seems strange to do that. It certainly seems strange to my brother-in-law. So what the hell is going on? What are we doing? So I'm pretty much finished now, but just summarising, the first thing about climate change mitigation, doing all this, this is not an elitist thing, because really the third world is going to be hit first and hardest by this. And so if there's going to be any global response on this thing, essentially, we're going to have to take the third world into account. Otherwise, that's just not going to succeed. As I said, politicians at the moment are shying away from these, or we get all sorts of, I wouldn't call it greenwashing, but things like the ETS here in New Zealand, which what we've got is just so watered down, it's useless. So the whole thing, short electoral cycles, I really don't know about how to sort that out. But I do know that people power is very important, and that politicians really listen to people. The bottom line of this is that essentially we cannot continue to where we're going at the moment. If you're talking about growth, economic growth, it's actually impossible under a high carbon model. We can't carry on like that. The only way that we can continue with any sort of lifestyle is to go to a low carbon growth model. Here's something I thought I would put up, and it has to do with that discounting in future generations and economists who say that, well, in terms of our current model, the best thing you can do is rip off as much as you can right now and use it up right away. Go ahead and mine all the national parks. But that tells you nothing about the future generation. Now, I've particularly talked to a lot of school teachers and to students, and even right down to the primary school level. Here's the thing, you know, I mean, you have to wonder whether there really is a moral issue here, and even a legal one. And I've heard a lot of young people, the ones who think and aren't boy racist, that is, who are really pissed off about this. They're really angry about what's going on. And, you know, they're talking about putting Max Bradfords, etc., in jail. So the best hope to me is that the young generation becomes informed, involved and proactive. And it really is essential that people, if you're into it, get out there and talk. Try and make a difference. Try and do something. So, that's been my own personal decision. It's pretty scary, quitting a really good job here and going out and doing this stuff. I've got a point here, climate change, am I a pessimist or an optimist? Now, I'm actually sort of both. I've shown you the technology. The technology's there. We can sort this thing. We know how to do it. It's all there. But I'm very, very pessimistic about the kind of political and economic systems that we have set up. And I don't have the skills or the knowledge to know how to change those, or even if they can be changed. So, I'm just going to finish off there. Thanks very much.